Picture this. It's early morning, you're sitting at the departure end of a grass strip, dew still on the prop, the turf a little soft from last night's rain. You've done the soft field technique before, kind of in the sense that you practiced it on pavement and nodded along when your instructor explained the steps. But right now, with the airplane settling slightly into the grass and the nose wheel sinking just a little more than you expected, you feel the difference between knowing the procedure and understanding the technique. I'm Pattern on Traffic Pattern at Radio Hangar, and today we are going to talk about soft field takeoffs and landings, two maneuvers that appear on virtually every private pilot check ride. Two maneuvers where I have watched more students stumble than almost anywhere else, not because the technique is impossibly difficult, but because it runs directly against your instincts if you do not understand the aerodynamics behind it. Quick word for our friends at aviationsoul.com before we get into it. They make challenge coins for every step of the aviation journey. First solo, private, instrument, commercial, all of it. Great way to mark the milestones that actually meant something to earn. Check them out at aviationsoul.com. Now, let's build this from the ground up. The first thing to understand is what soft field technique is actually solving for. The goal is to minimize the time your wheels spend in contact with a surface that offers resistance or could allow the gear to dig in. Grass, gravel, sand, wet sod, even frost-covered pavement early in the morning. These are all surfaces where prolonged contact between your tires and the ground can create drag, can allow the nose wheel to dig in, and in a worst case, can nose the airplane right over. The technique exists to manage that contact, to shift the airplane's weight from its wheels to its wings as quickly as possible, and to do it at a lower airspeed than a normal departure. That is the core principle. Keep it in mind, because every specific technique point I'm about to walk through flows directly from it. Let's start before you even get to the runway, because soft field operations begin at the hold short line and do not end until the airplane is clear of the surface. When you're taxiing to a soft field runway, your technique changes. You want to keep moving. On a genuinely soft or wet surface, stopping means your gear starts to sink, and getting rolling again costs you energy and creates drag, so you carry a slightly higher taxi speed than you might on pavement. You keep power up to maintain momentum, and you hold back pressure on the elevator to lighten the nose wheel load. The back pressure in the taxi is not about actually lifting the nose off the ground. The nose wheel is still on the surface. What you're doing is reducing the vertical load on that wheel so it does not sink as deeply into soft material. In a high-wing aircraft like a Cessna 172, full back pressure at taxi speed will raise the nose gear slightly, and you can sometimes see a visual difference if the taxiway has any give to it at all. The idea is to ride on the main gear as much as possible and keep the delicate nose gear light. Now, the entry onto the runway. This is where a lot of students already break the technique, and the examiner is watching from the moment you approach the hold short. You do not stop and then enter. You do a rolling entry. You coordinate your clearance, whether from tower or from your own traffic check at an uncontrolled field, so that you can roll right onto the runway without stopping. You maintain your momentum on a wet grass strip, stopping at the hold short with full brakes, and then trying to start rolling again is a losing proposition. The technique is continuous. As you roll onto the runway surface, you apply full power and simultaneously pull the elevator to the full aft position, full back pressure. Right now, before the speed builds, this does two things. It immediately unloads the nose gear, and it sets you up for the earliest possible rotation. The runway surface is the enemy of this maneuver. You want to leave it as soon as physics allows. Here is the counterintuitive part, and this is where I see the most confusion. With full back pressure and full power applied, the airplane will rotate early. Probably earlier than you expect. In many training aircraft, you will get a nose-high attitude developing well before normal rotation speed, and the airplane will want to fly before you have reached the normal climb speed. And your job, at that moment, is to let it. You will feel the main gear leave the surface. Maybe the airplane lifts off at 40 knots, maybe 45. That is fine. That is the technique working. Now comes the most important piece. You do not pull back to climb. You do not try to establish a normal climb attitude. You hold the airplane in ground effect. Ground effect is the aerodynamic phenomenon that occurs when you are flying within roughly one wingspan of the surface. When the wing is that close to the ground, the downwash angle behind the wing is reduced. The vortices that form at the wingtips, the ones responsible for induced drag, are physically disrupted by the proximity to the surface. Induced drag drops significantly. and because induced drag is reduced, the airplane can maintain lift at an airspeed that would be insufficient in free air. Think of it as a zone where the physics work in your favor. The airplane can fly at a speed that 20 feet higher would result in a stall. So you have rotated early, you are 2 or 3 feet off the surface, and you are holding that altitude, level flight just above the runway, not climbing. You are letting the speed build while the engine pulls you toward a speed where you can actually sustain a climb. You're in the lone zone, borrowing lift from ground effect while the airplane accelerates. In a Cessna 172, you will typically rotate off the surface somewhere around 42 to 47 knots. Hold level flight in ground effect while the speed climbs towards 60 or 65 knots, and then transition to a normal climb attitude. If you have obstacle clearance concerns on departure, you climb at best angle of climb speed, which in the 172 at sea level is around 62 knots. If the departure path is clear, best rate of climb gets you altitude more efficiently. Either way, you do not leave ground effect until you have that speed. The transition from ground effect to climb is not abrupt. You're accelerating, the speed comes up, you ease back gently to establish the climb attitude. It should feel smooth. If you yank back at climb speed, you have been tense through the whole maneuver and you are rushing. Let me describe what it looks like when a student does this wrong, because recognizing the failure modes helps you catch yourself in the moment. Failure 1, stopping at the hold short. You have already violated the technique before power is up. On the check ride, this is a missed task element under the Airman Certification Standards, or ACS. The examiner noted it. Failure 2. Normal rotation attitude. The student applies full power builds to normal rotation speed and lifts off at the usual speed and attitude. The nose wheel may have spent considerably more time on the surface than necessary, and there was no use of ground effect. It looks like a normal takeoff with back pressure in the taxi. Failure 3. The premature climb. This is the most common and the most consequential. The airplane lifts off early. The student feels the ground leave, and instinct says climb. They pull back. The airplane pitches up, and one of two things happens. Either the airplane settles back to the surface, which is embarrassing and potentially damaging, or it manages to drag itself out of ground effect before the speed is adequate, leaving you in a mushy, marginally controlled climb with insufficient energy to recover from a gust or a moment of inattention. On a real soft field departure, that second outcome is the one that gets people hurt. Failure 4. Failing to transition to climb. Some students do the ground effect phase correctly, but then forget to actually fly the airplane away from the field. They are skimming the turf for far too long. Once you are at the target speed, climb, the ground effect was a means, not an end. Here's something I wish someone had told me when I was learning this. The soft field takeoff is a lesson in trusting what you know about the airplane. You know the airplane can fly. You know it will accelerate in ground effect. The technique asks you to stay low, stay patient, and let the physics work. That patience is hard to come by when you're close to the surface and the instinct to climb is very loud. Now let's talk about the landing. The soft field landing has a different goal, but it shares the same underlying principle. Protect the nose wheel, manage the surface contact, and transfer weight gently. On final, your approach technique is largely normal. Some instructors carry an extra knot or two of approach speed as a buffer. You're going to make a normal flare, land on the main gear, and then the soft field technique begins in earnest. After touchdown, your job is to keep the nose wheel off the surface as long as possible, full back pressure after the mains touch. As the airplane decelerates, you are holding the nose up, letting the main gear carry the weight while the speed bleeds off, and then gradually letting the nose lower as you approach normal taxi speed. On a muddy grass strip, that gentle touchdown of the nose wheel is the difference between uneventful and a nose-over. What you are not doing on a soft field landing is braking hard. On a wet grass surface, aggressive braking can plant the nose gear, dig in the main gear, or cause directional control problems. You use whatever braking safety requires, but the soft field technique minimizes braking and trusts that the surface will decelerate you on its own. Here's the confusion I see between soft field and short field landings, and this trips up students on the check ride more than I would expect. Short field technique, maximum performance, threshold speed, touch down on a specific aim point, apply brakes, stop short. Soft field technique, gentleness, touch down as slowly as possible, protect the nose gear, minimize braking, stay rolling. These are opposing philosophies in some ways. On the check ride, when the examiner calls for a soft field landing, they want to see that you understand the gear protection principle and you are not slamming on the brakes the moment the mains touch. If you learned the short field landing the week before and you're still in that mindset, you will plant the nose, wheel, and brake and look at the examiner like you did exactly right. Know which technique you are being asked for and why they are different. Let me talk about why this matters beyond the check ride, because it does. A meaningful portion of general aviation accidents involving loss of control on the ground happen during soft field operations or operations on grass and unpaved surfaces, nose-overs during landing rollout, loss of directional control during takeoff from wet grass. These are real scenarios in the accident record, and understanding the technique is not academic. And even if you fly only paved airports for your entire flying life, the soft field takeoff gives you something valuable. It forces you to develop a precise picture of the airplane in ground effect. It makes you fly close to the surface intentionally, with back pressure and active control at low airspeed. That awareness translates into better landings, better flares, and better instincts about what the airplane is doing near the ground. Pilots who have done real soft field technique tend to land more smoothly on pavement. The connection is direct. Some practical tips for check ride day. Brief yourself on the entry before you start the engine. Know clearly that when you approach the hold short, you are not stopping. Have your clearance ready, your run-up complete. Roll right on. Know your airplane. In a lightly loaded 172 on a cool morning, you will be off the ground quickly and the ground effect phase will be brief. In a heavier load or a warmer day, it takes a little longer to accelerate to climb speed. Know what to expect before you're doing it. Trim appropriately before you get there. You do not want to be fighting the elevator through the ground effect phase. On the landing, brief yourself clearly. After touchdown, back pressure stays. Nose stays up. Let the speed come down. Do not grab the brakes. And if you can practice this on actual soft surfaces before your check ride, do it. Doing the technique on pavement is better than not doing it at all, but you will not feel the real benefit until the airplane sinks slightly into turf and you feel the resistance underfoot. If your CFI can get you an hour on a grass strip before the check ride, take it. The technique will click in a way that pavement practice cannot fully replicate. The examiner is looking for a continuous rolling entry, full back pressure on runway entry, smooth power application, early rotation, deliberate use of ground effect, and a clean transition to climb at the appropriate speed. On the landing side, they want a smooth touchdown on the mains, back pressure held to protect the nose gear and control deceleration. It is not a complicated list, but each item requires that you understand the why, not just the what. Soft field technique is one of those areas where knowing the steps and understanding the concept are completely different things. The pilots who nail it are not the ones who memorized a checklist. They are the ones who understand that they are managing a conversation between the airplane and the surface, and that the fastest way to win that conversation is to let the wings take over early. The FAA's Airplane Flying Handbook covers soft field operations in detail and is available free at the FAA.gov website. The ACS task areas for takeoffs and landings lay out exactly what the examiner is looking for. Both are worth your time before check ride day. I'm Pattern, this is Traffic Pattern, on Radio Hangar, radiohangar.com. Fly safe.